So good morning everyone and welcome. Welcome to Essex Church and to this, our gathered community of Kensington Unitarians. Today our service is all about noticing. And you will notice, if you have a look at our order of service, that we're having a slightly changed order from our usual one. Janine and I have brought together music and readings and times for contemplation, and all of them are guiding us to pay attention, to be in the present moment. This service is part of our monthly ministry theme of grace, and today we're thinking of grace as a moment of insight or a flash of inspiration. The grace perhaps of facing our difficulties rather than hiding from them. And so I invite you now to take a moment to be here in this present moment, aware of the busy London streets, prepared for a very hot London marathon that Sue assures me has been rerouted through this very church. That I think she's teasing. Be aware of sensations. It's warm, even in this room. Notice whatever is in our minds, in our hearts, in our bodies right now. Simply noticing. And noticing too, perhaps, our oh-so-human quickness to judge, to decide, well, I don't like this, but I do like that. Yet finding ways simply to be with what is in the here and now, simply noticing that which is. And as our chalice is lit this morning, this symbol of our worldwide progressive faith, and we see its flame burning brightly, may its light be with us and kindle a flame within our hearts that we might know and appreciate this gift of being alive as though we've realised it for the very first time. That we might better pay attention to the wonder of existence. And that we might better love our world and better love our lives and better love one another. Welcome, everyone.
Last night, stressing about undone tasks, I glanced in a mirror and saw my T-shirt with its picture of a galaxy and a little sign sticking up out of its outer swirls saying, "You are here." A joke from my wife. I've worn this shirt many times, yet for once it stopped me in my tracks. In William Blake's phrase, the doors of perception popped open and it really hit me. Yes, we are actually here. Off to the edge of a vast floating whirlpool of stars, alive, conscious, walking and talking on a big rock circling a bigger burning ball of gas. Here, now, nearly 14 billion years after the cosmos emerged out of nothing. What the? My mind stopped yapping. And I felt the delight and awe of a little kid who for the first time sees a butterfly or tastes ice cream or realizes that the stars above are really far away. Gratitude and wow and something edging into, dare I say it, sacred, washed through me. In a word, I was amazed, which means filled with wonder and surprise. Even overwhelmed with wonder. Besides the simple happiness in this experience, it lifted me above the tangled pressures and worries I was stuck to like a bug on flypaper. Amazement is instant stress relief. It also opens the heart. I couldn't any longer be even just a little exasperated with my wife. Perhaps most deeply, being amazed brings you into the truth of things, into relationship with the inherent mysteries and overwhelming gifts of existence, scaled from the molecular machinery of life to the love and forgiveness in human hearts, to the dark matter that glues the universe together. Wow. Really? Wow. Opportunities for amazement are all around us. Seen with the eyes of a child, the simplest thing is amazing. A blade of grass being licked by a puppy. The taste of cinnamon. Riding piggyback on your daddy. Or the fact that running your eyes over lines of black squiggles in a book fills your mind with tales of dragons and heroes and fairy godmothers. Try to see the world more in this way, as if you were seeing it for the first time, perhaps through the eyes of a child. Beginner's mind, Zen mind. If we're not amazed, we're not paying attention. And if we were brave enough to be more often filled with wonder and surprise, we would treat ourselves and others and our fragile world more gently.
Thank you, Harold. Reading words by Rick Hansen. Be amazed. And let's take that idea into a time of reflection and prayer now. So may we look with gratitude upon this day for the beauty of the world. From the first radiance of its dawn to the last golden glow of sunset. May we remember that the sun and the moon, the stars and the planets are above us, just as the sweet earth is beneath our feet. Let's be thankful for sources of joy, for the inspiration of ideas, for music that lifts our spirits, for the greeting of a friend, and for the gracious loveliness of children and animals, reminding us of life's wonders. And in our gratitude for all that we have, let's spare a thought for all people and places where life is tough, where daily life is a struggle, where it seems as though humanity takes one step forward and two steps back. In particular, we might think of escalating conflicts in the Middle East, where ordinary people's lives, people just like us, their lives are turned upside down and destroyed. Oh, may we humans seek new solutions to old dilemmas. May all people of the world commit ourselves to finding new ways forward. May these age-old problems fall away to reveal a greater truth. And may peace and love prevail throughout all the communities of the world, as well as in our own hearts, this day. Amen.
This short reading by Reverend David Rankin reflects on his experience of visiting Miss Sweeney as she was nearing death. And when he had the opportunity to look at the world from her perspective, her ability to still notice the small, sweet details in life, like the sky, the trees, and the robin's nest, he noticed the world in a new way. She stared out the window and smiled. Miss Sweeney was almost gone, a wisp of white hair, two brown eyes, small thin lips, and a quivering body were all that remained. She stared out the window and smiled. After 48 years of teaching and 87 years of life, and 6 years paralysed from the neck down, Miss Sweeney seemed to be part of another world. She stared out the window and smiled. Miss Sweeney was tied to the bed for safety. She could no longer speak an intelligible word or move her head from side to side or even chew her food. She stared out the window and smiled. After she died, I returned to her room to collect her belongings. From the bed, I could see the expanse of sky and a single limb of a tree. A robin was nesting in Miss Sweeney's world. I stared out the window and smiled. A poem by Mary Oliver now, which some of you might know, a poem acknowledging the mysteries in our lives. Truly, we live with mysteries too marvellous to be understood. How grass can be nourishing in the mouths of the lambs. How rivers and stones are forever in allegiance with gravity, while we ourselves dream of rising. How two hands touch, and the bonds will never be broken. How people come from delight or the scars of damage to the comfort of a poem. Let me keep my distance always from those who think they have the answers. Let me keep company always with those who say, look, and laugh in astonishment and bow their heads.
Well, our service today is filled with musical treats, and here's your next one. I don't know if you know this piece, a piano piece written by a Scottish composer, Peter Maxwell Davis, called Farewell to Stromness. It's a lovely lyrical piece. It's a good 5 minutes long. And what we're going to invite you to do in this time is a kind of contemplative exercise. We're going to invite you to come and choose a daffodil and be with your daffodil. Some of us were at the One Spirit Foundation service here a week or two ago. They did the same exercise. I have borrowed it from them. And in their exercise, the daffodil actually spoke to us. And my life has been changed as a result of that. So if you want your daffodil to speak to you, that's fine. But otherwise, you might just want to wander around together. Examine it. Look at it as though you've never seen a daffodil ever before. This is the first one that you have ever come across. The door's open. You might want to go out to the garden. Feel free to sit somewhere different. Move around a bit and be comfortable in your time of contemplation. And thank you to Sandra, who is a musician who's been saying yes to me all month. It can't last, Sandra, can it? Enjoy. Farewell to Stromness. Mm-hmm. a few words to lead us into a time of meditation. So after this reading, we'll hold a good 3 minutes or so in stillness together. And that time will come to an end with a chime from our bell. This piece is called "Did You Hear That Bird Sing?" It's written by Anthony de Mello, a Jesuit priest who was not always approved of by the Vatican. He had a very radical, mystical, sometimes irreverent approach to spirituality, a great storyteller, a great noticer. See if this speaks to you. He writes, "In our quest for God, we think too much, reflect too much, talk too much. Even when we look at this dance that we call creation, we are the whole time thinking, talking to ourselves and others, reflecting, analysing, philosophising, words, noise. Be silent and contemplate the dance. Just look. A star. A flower. A fading leaf. A bird, a stone, any fragment of the dance will do. Look, listen, smell, touch, taste. And hopefully it won't be long before you see him, the dancer himself." Now the disciple was always complaining to his master, "You're hiding the final secret of Zen from me." And he just would not accept the master's denials. Then one day, they were walking in the hills when they heard a bird sing. "Did you hear that bird sing?" asked the master. "Yes," said the disciple. "Well," came the reply, "now you know that I have hidden nothing from you." "Yes, if you really heard a bird sing, if you really saw a tree, you would know. Beyond words and concepts." "What is that you said? You've heard dozens of birds sing and seen hundreds of trees. Ah, was it the tree you saw or was it the label? If you look at a tree and see a tree, you have not really seen the tree. When you look at the tree and you see a miracle, then at last you have seen. Did your heart ever fill with wordless wonder when you heard a bird in song?"
There have been many times in my life when I've desperately not wanted to feel what I'm feeling. I used to smoke cigarettes, about 20 a day on a good day, but I gave up smoking just over 20 years ago. And in those years, I've only had a craving for a cigarette about twice. Well, actually, it was about twice until a couple of days ago, when I found myself having another desire for a cigarette, when I was mulling over an upsetting situation which had happened in my life. That desire for a cigarette, I realised, was quite extreme for me, saying that I hadn't wanted one for over 5 years. And from that realisation, I noticed the word to the emotion I was actually feeling emerging from my mouth. I feel rage. From that second, the cigarette desire was gone, and in fact, so was the rage. It was replaced by calmness, as being able to name what I was feeling enabled me to see the upsetting situation much more clearly. I realised that I'd had some unrealistic expectations, which had led me to feeling disappointed. I'd become entangled in someone else's emotional baggage and taken their actions personally when they weren't personal. With that new awareness, I could take a metaphorical step back and mentally let go of the upsetting situation more easily. But had I dashed out to buy some cigarettes, no offence to those who smoke, but for me, that would have been a whole different story. The reason why I tell you this is as an example of what American Tibetan Buddhist nun Pema Chodron writes about in this following reading. It's about a 5-minute reading, and it's from her book, When Things Fall Apart, Heart Advice for Difficult Times. She writes about the challenges many people the world over have with allowing themselves to feel and even notice certain emotions, such as anger, jealousy, embarrassment, or that they've reached some form of breaking point. You might well relate yourselves. She writes that the desire to deaden those feelings with some form of distraction can easily turn into an addiction for many. And instead of using things to dissociate from our difficult experiences, she offers the practice of meditation as a tool for us to associate with our lives and the truth of the experiences we are living. This is what she writes. Generally speaking, we regard discomfort in any form as bad news. But for practitioners or spiritual warriors, people who have a certain hunger to know what is true, feelings like disappointment, embarrassment, irritation, resentment, anger, jealousy, and fear, instead of being bad news, are actually very clear moments that teach us where it is that we're holding back. They teach us to perk up and lean in when we feel we'd rather collapse and back away. They're like messengers that show us with terrifying clarity exactly where we're stuck. This very moment is the perfect teacher. And lucky for us, it's with us wherever we go. Those events and people in our lives who trigger our unresolved issues could be regarded as good news. We don't have to go hunting for anything. We don't need to try to create situations in which we reach our limit. They occur all by themselves, with clockwork regularity. Each day, we're given many opportunities to open up or shut down. The most precious opportunity presents itself when we come to a place where we think we can't handle whatever is happening. It's too much. It's gone too far. We feel bad about ourselves. There's no way we can manipulate the situation to make ourselves come out looking good. No matter how hard we try, it just won't work. Basically, life has just nailed us. This is the place in life where you have no choice except to embrace what's happening or push it away. Most of us do not take these uncomfortable situations in life as teachings. We automatically hate them. We run like crazy. We use all kinds of ways to escape. All addictions stem from this moment when we meet our edge and we just can't stand it. We feel we have to soften it, pad it with something, and we become addicted to whatever it is that seems to ease the pain. In fact, the rampant materialism that we see in the world stems from this moment. There are so many ways that have been dreamt up to entertain us away from the moment, soften its hard edge, deaden it, so we don't have to feel the full impact of the pain that arises when we cannot manipulate the situation to make us come out looking fine. Meditation is an invitation to notice when we reach our limit and to not get carried away by hope or fear. Through meditation, we're able to see clearly what's going on with our thoughts and emotions, and we can also let go of them. What's encouraging about meditation is that even if we shut down, we can no longer shut down in ignorance. We see very clearly that we're closing off. That in itself begins to illuminate the darkness of ignorance. We're able to see how we run and hide and keep ourselves busy so that we never have to let our hearts be penetrated. And we're also able to see how we can open and relax. This very moment is the perfect teacher, and it's always with us, is a really profound instruction. Just seeing what's going on, that's the teaching right there. We can be with what's happening and not dissociate. Awakeness is found in our pleasure and our pain, our confusion and our wisdom, available in each moment of our weird, unfathomable, ordinary, everyday lives.
And this reading is by Buddhist teacher Thich Nhat Hanh. It's just going to be a little extract, and in fact you've got, I hope, extracts from all the readings today on a piece of paper in your hymn order of service. We just thought it would be really helpful to have little snippets from today. I don't know about you, I don't suppose, we haven't all got the same issues, have we? I have got a bit of a thing about washing up. If people are going to wash up, I want them to wash up properly. I don't want to find bits of cereals on my bowls or toast on my plates. And this obsessive attitude of mine is probably why this reading of Thich Nhat Hanh's, which I first heard about 25 years ago, it's one I have just kept coming back to again and again. And when I found it again for this service, it did make me laugh, because he describes washing up in a Buddhist monastery in Vietnam like 30 or 40 years ago, possibly even more, when they had to wash up for 100 monks. There were two novice monks and they had to do all the washing up for 100 monks. They had no soap. They only had cold water. They only had ashes and rice husks and coconut husks to clean everything with. And what he discovered was that if he started on that task thinking, oh my goodness, I've got to wash up, it was very tedious. But if he just washed up because he was washing up, if he just focused on that task, the whole thing was quite blissful after all. So I'll just read you the very last piece of this. He writes that if while washing dishes, we think only of the cup of tea that awaits us afterwards, thus hurrying to get the dishes out of the way as if they were a nuisance, then we are not washing the dishes to wash the dishes. What's more, we're not alive during the time we are washing the dishes. In fact, we are completely incapable of realizing the miracle of life while standing at that sink. If we can't wash the dishes, well, the chances are we can't drink our tea either. While drinking the cup of tea, we'll only be thinking of other things, barely aware of the cup in our hands. And thus we are sucked into the future and we are incapable of actually living 1 minute of life. Strong words from Thich Nhat Hanh. So let's think, which order shall we do this in? Let's do my closing words and then let's go on to your piece from Handel. So just some closing blessing words now. Paying attention. To pay attention is to be awake and aware, here in the present moment. And so may we in this week ahead do all we can to stay in this here and now, not pulled by the past nor dreaming of future yet to be. May the grace of each moment be with us in our every step and in our every breath as we step out bravely on this journey of life. Amen. Go well and blessed be.